Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Success Bug. Been a couple weeks now. I'm excited, been very excited to put this interview out. It's honestly, I can say, one of my favorite interviews thus far that we've had over the past year and a half since we've started this podcast. But before I get ahead of myself, if you don't know by now, my name is Jay Washington. Every other Friday, I interview another young, successful, relatable entrepreneur. They share their story with me, in turn, share their story with you, the audience. We all learn together, inspiring you all to escape the 9-to-5, one episode at a time. Drum roll. The entrepreneur we are interviewing today is Noel Dizel. Now, you might know Noel from his daily fitness tips on Instagram and TikTok, where he has a combined 4 million plus followers on each platform. But Noel is the co-owner of Rise Supplements. He is an IFBB pro heavyweight bodybuilder and also a young LA athlete. Not only is the guy just jacked, but he's grown his community to over 4 million people through his, honestly, motivational content, his daily fitness tips, all throughout social media, and he's really built an incredible name for himself over the past year and a half, mainly thanks to his awesome work on TikTok. So I won't keep you waiting any longer. Please enjoy Noel Dizel. There's the stash. I've seen the videos.
it's growing on me.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It seems like it was a pretty big decision.
Yeah. I was a little bit subjective to getting the stash. But I was ratioed significantly. And looks like it's going to be up for a little while.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's definitely going to grow back quickly. So that was probably the big reassurance of anything. It's going to grow back.
It was actually received a lot better than I thought it would be.
Right.
Put up a post earlier. And sorry, apologies for being a little bit late.
Yeah, no worries. 5:15 is a bit of a weird time anyway. So I figured that might have messed you up a little bit. I don't know why I chose that as a time.
Yeah, so we just did a post. Yeah, we went yesterday to a little neighborhood, it's not too far from here.
Okay.
Just for a little luncheon and got some pics for the new drop for YLA. So that our first like reveal of the stash,
you know,
video, and even the comments are just overwhelming. Like. I think I was upgraded. I've been upgraded to Father Noel.
Father Noel. Okay. So where did Daddy Noel come from? I feel like is that a just comment thing? Like everybody's started calling you that.
Yeah. Interesting story. So I was very reluctant to be referred to as Daddy Noel. It took a lot for me to get used to in the beginning. It kind of just sparked off on one of the videos that we did on TikTok.
Okay.
And people just took to it immensely so. And now, you know, it's just become a thing. I think I see the same is happening with Chris Bumstead.
Yeah.
So the two daddies of the fitness industry, I think. Point, but like I said, more recently I've been promoted to Father or Papa or Senor.
Okay.
Omnino. So,
which do you prefer? Is it Papa, Father, Daddy? Which is the best?
I think Papa Noel has got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, it fits with the stash too.
Very festive, you know. It just reminds me of Christmas, and so it just feels good to me.
Right.
I'm happy to go. Papa.
Well, regardless, I'm glad that we could finally do this. I know we talked about a lot of really cool things last time we connected, and I've been excited for this one for a long time. I think honestly, like the way that you mentioned being called Papa and like how that's your favorite now, when you look back kind of to the beginning of your entire journey from when you were younger, and I know you said you started fitness when you were kind of in your early 20s. Like, would you ever imagine that you would be in the position that you are, like people calling you the names that they are and all this type of stuff when you were just picked up like your first dumbbell or your first weight?
Yeah, I never expected or anticipated, the sort of growth that we've seen. I refer to we, I mean, it's myself and there's a team that I work with that helps right. obviously film and edit as we're expanding so that we can kind of just, make sure we're putting out adequate content across platforms, across the various platforms. You know, it kind of took off as quite an explosion on TikTok, and we saw some rapid growth initially on TikTok and Instagram soon followed, and then more recently YouTube has just popped off. And there's a couple other things, Cameo, and so as the platforms are increasing, as the workload is increasing, we're kind of just expanding. But not to stray too far from the question. I tend to talk a lot, so you'll have to just keep.
Yeah, no, that's good for the show. That's all good.
So I was always the shy guy. I would always try and steer away from cameras. I remember as a kid, the camcorder, VHS, recorder used to come out, and I used to run for the hills. I was just extremely shy. I didn't like being in any videos. I didn't like being in any pictures. I was just really insecure in that sense, especially in my teenhood, young adult, I kind of had this growth spurt, and very quickly I was, 188 centimeters, which is about 6'2", 6'3". So, I had this growth spurt and I just stretched, and along with that, my muscles just stretched, and I just looked like, a Rama noodle, I was like an electric.
I was like, what age is that? Like late teens?
I was probably about 16, I would say. Okay. 15, 16. I just stretched out and I was tall and lanky and just an awkward looking kid,
Okay. Yeah.
And I think, as a result of that, obviously I faced quite a bit of bullying.
Okay.
That led to obviously insecurities. I battled to gain weight. I was very active. I did a lot of sport. I did a lot of track and field. Pretty much every single sport you could think of. I don't know if you're familiar with the term or if there's anything like that there, but we have here what's called like victillatorum.
I'm not familiar. What is it?
So yeah, it's awarded to, it's like the highest accolade or achievement for a sports person. You are the ultimate sportsman,
Wow. Okay. That's a great honor then, even with the bullying and all that.
I did sprint. I did long distance. I did hurdles. I did relay. I did shot put, discus, javelin, soccer, rugby. Name it. If there was a sport, I would participate in the sport. And then I got to around the age of, I would say 16, and kind of got involved with a different group of friends. And so sport wasn't cool,
Right.
So kind of fell out of sport completely. But whilst I was active, I really struggled with my activities and obviously the food portions and things that I was consuming at the time to pick up or put on any sort of weight. As a result, kind of got mocked, bullied for my lankiness, which led to self-confidence issues. And, what spiked my need or desire to obviously start training, put on weight, I remember we went out the one night and I was there with my girlfriend at the time. And this guy just started hitting on her in front of me.
Right.
And I just stood there observing this. And, you know, there's, you're standing and you have this like moment of silence to yourself and you kind of engulf in your thoughts. And then there was just this like this switch, you know, this trigger that said, we need to go to gym. We can't have this happen.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. That's insane.
That was the tipping point. That was the turning point.
That's crazy.
I distinctly recall, I can tell you very visually, you know, the setting we were and exactly what the guy looked like. And it was a very big milestone, I guess, in my life that I was like, this is it.
So what did you do in the moment? Did you just... was that kind of, you just went into your head and you were kind of froze up at the time? Cause I know obviously at the time you were not the size you are now. So it wasn't exactly a situation where you're going to throw him through a window.
I wasn't confrontational about the issue or anything like that. I was all just caught up in my head and my thoughts and, it was a bit overwhelming.
Yeah.
And came to this realization that I had to do things. That was the cherry on top.
Right.
That was just the buildup of years of being bullied and taken advantage of. And it was just like, bam, this is what needs to be done. And immediately I started, trying to gain mass, gain muscle. I started to do push-ups and chin-ups and whatever I could around the house.
Right.
Started to consume a lot more food. I can tell you my favorite meal, my go-to. And this isn't by any means any sort of advice. I mean, it was a terrible decision.
This is just how you went into lifting.
Yeah, with a lack of knowledge and information. Which brings me to another point. I mean, kind of the general ethos or what the platform stand for is helping people like learn from my mistakes.
Right.
A lot of it was trial and error. I mean, we didn't have the technology, we didn't have the platforms that kind of support a lot of the information that is available at the moment. And the ease of access to that knowledge and information through platforms like YouTube and TikTok and Instagram.
For sure.
It was... We at the time we probably just adopted dial-up internet, so just Google really was at its infancy. But I don't want to make myself sound too old either, so
I mean, again, the internet isn't that old. Like it's a recent boom, especially TikTok and social media and all that. So it makes sense.
So we had publications, that came out, and I would go out and get these magazines and I'd pull out the centerfold, the fold up posters, and I'd post those all over the world, all over the wall. And that was really just the kind of motivation that I had at the time. And I lost train of thought. In terms of meals, it was egg. So I had two fried eggs with mayonnaise on white bread. Like that was my go-to. That was my staple diet.
Every morning or just like even lunch and dinner? Every meal.
And I was actually introduced to that meal by our domestic worker. She was like a second mother to me, around the house. And she introduced me to this concept of fried egg with mayonnaise on white bread. And being very high in calories, I started to obviously
just eat them like snacks.
Yeah.
So one question before, not to cut you off, but something I was curious about before when you began is, so what part of the world were you born in? And was there a specific type of culture that promoted the need to be bigger and kind of have a more dominating presence? Like, is that something you think you dealt with while you were getting up and wanting to take in more calories and get bigger to start?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think born in South Africa, born and raised in South Africa.
Right, you mentioned that. Right.
genetically, you know, the people here are just bigger, you know.
Really?
Big boned, thick ankles, big calves. I mean, wow. You know, the typical South African or Afrikaner male is genetically built, you know, well built, strong.
Just naturally.
Just big, you know. So, whereas growing up in that era, I mean, I like to do the comparison. I like to say, I mean, look at the action figures.
Okay.
I don't know how old you are, but when I grew up, we had action figures. We had the likes of He-Man.
Right.
We
had, familiar with He-Man.
We had these abnormally large, muscled action figures. You know,
those are like your role models at the time.
Those are the role models. I mean, and I can't help but assume that, you know, we perceive this role of power and success by these massive muscular bodies.
Right.
And I've seen that shift. I've seen that transition over the years. I mean, if we look at the type of action figures and the type of superheroes that we have today, you know, let me just give you one example of present day Superman. Present day Spider-Man.
Right. Great. You know?
And it's like you can see it in the physiques. You know?
Yeah.
You can see it in the generations and how they progress towards what we perceive as
acceptable.
These role model figures, you know, or these figures of power and success.
Right.
So it, for me, it was, you know, big. Bigger is better.
Right.
And so I set out to be bigger and better. You know, in my mind, I just, that came with putting on muscle.
Right. And when you look at that now, do you feel like that was the right decision for your mental health and just for you as a person? Or do you think at the time maybe it was a little bit unhealthy to feel like you had to morph to what everybody else wanted you to be almost?
So I can honestly say I don't have any sort of regrets in terms of the decisions that I made. I don't think it's had any sort of negative impact.
Yeah, it's been a pretty positive thing for you overall.
Yeah. I mean, you know, look, it got to the point. I just need to divulge a little bit in terms of the process, because with all of this eating, you know, there's this term, eat big to get big, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
We actually filmed a video on this just this weekend. I mean, you do need to eat bigger in order to get bigger. But if you're going to eat big, expect to put on size, and not all of that is going to be muscle. You know, there's going to be a spillover. You're going to put on other weight.
Right.
As I did. So I set out and I was eating, I was training, I was doing my thing. And this carried on for a few years. And I was happy. I thought I was happy. I mean, I was now being referred to as the big guy.
You know,
I wasn't the skinny guy, you know, the ramen noodle, the cord. I mean, I could go on for hours.
Tons of nicknames.
I was just happy. I wasn't being mocked and ridiculed, you know, for that. I was now like almost being referred to positively as the big guy. And so it felt good and mentally, and, you know, it helped me with my insecurities and things as well. And so I continued to eat and I continued to train. And I attended a function. It was a house party, an event. And
right.
Someone referred to me as the fat guy, you know, and that was another one of those pivotal moments.
Yeah,
you know,
gotta be. It's like the exact opposite of the first time. Exactly. From a ramen noodle to like a donut. Like.
Yeah, and so it was another one of those moments where of realization, and I sat there in my own thoughts again, and I was like, okay, wow. I don't want to be a fat guy. I mean, you know, I wanted to be the anything but
guy. Yeah,
the skinny man, you know, and that started, you know, the next phase of my journey in terms of fitness, where I actually started to take a lot more of a conscious approach in terms of controlled eating. And I put a lot more time, effort, and energy into doing research and understanding nutrition, understanding calories and understanding macros. And, you know, it wasn't just this barbaric approach of eat, train, you know,
train.
So that was the evolving point from there, which kind of transitioned.
Right. And when you
helped me really mature my physique at that point.
Right. So when you were going through all of this, obviously there are kind of, I mentioned this last time we talked a little bit, but there are a little bit of similarities almost, I feel, between kind of the process of building a business, which we'll get into later, which is basically what you've done out of what you've done for yourself, and also just bodybuilding in general. Like, there's kind of a repetition and a level of research that goes into it. Do you see any parallels with what you were doing along that initial journey of figuring things out that kind of also, you know, are parallel with the whole process of becoming successful and doing things like building your own business?
So if I understand the question, I'm sorry, you're saying, you know, in terms of consistency and you know, the hard work, you know, I think it's just part of my makeup, where, you know, the process that I've gone through in life, it's always been about working hard. And this really comes from a very young age, you know, where I would have to divulge, you know, a little bit into my past for you to understand where that, you know, where the concept of hard work, you know, really originates from for me, you know. And if I may just expand on that.
So, yeah, please do.
You know, I grew up in a very abusive household as a child. You know, my father was physically, mentally, emotionally abusive towards my mother. Often I would get like thrown into this confrontation to try and keep the peace or to separate, you know, to moderate the situation. There was a lot of trauma that came, you know, from that as a kid, from a very young age. And fortunately, I say fortunately, you know, they got separated. I think I was probably 11, 12. We grew up, it was myself, my mom, and my elder sister. She's 2 years older than myself.
Right.
It was tough, you know, financially. Imagine, it was very, you know, my mom would do two jobs to kind of support her. You know, coincidentally, a funny story, I was helping out tonight with making a chocolate planet, part of a science project.
Chocolate planet.
I just love getting involved with these sort of things. So I was very happy to help out. I was like, let me help out. I have some experience with this.
Yeah.
All the chocolatier, because my mom used to make these little chocolate molds in order to sell at functions and events to kind of raise some additional funds, you know.
Right.
To
try and house. And this is while you are living in the house with your siblings and just your mom at this point?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up on hand-me-downs, which is somewhat problematic when your elder sibling is a female or a girl, you know. Right. So there's
yeah, not exactly the type of hand-me-downs you might want. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, I at a very young age, I had to hustle, I had to trade, I had to sell, I had to, you know, kind of improvise and do what I could in order to kind of fund my, you know, activities and lifestyle at the time. I mean, I was into skateboarding and
yeah,
it is quite an expensive hobby, you know, in terms of the shoes and the boards and all of the accessories and things that come with it. You know, so that kind of triggered or sparked, you know, my entrepreneurial flair.
Right.
Not that I can say I was much of an entrepreneur. I was more just of a hustler, you know, just kind of trading.
Yeah. You know? You're like a young hustler. Like,
yeah, I would trade, a gift that I got for a pair of shoes, just that I could have a pair of shoes, you know?
Right, right.
And so it went on. But that then evolved into becoming more of an entrepreneur as I grasped the concept of being able to kind of, you know, generate funds, you know, for myself and kind of sustain my own lifestyle in that sense.
Right.
So that was obviously through the likes of high school, primary school. Yeah, it was high school. And I actually studied correspondence in high school, which was grade 10, 11, and 12. So by the end of grade 12, I was fully qualified. I had my certificate diploma and I was ready to work at that point.
Not to cut you off, but college at that point, was that in the cards for you at all? Or was it more of trying to continue to just, you know, create money for yourself and for your family?
Yeah, so college wasn't an option. There weren't the funds or finances for that. So right. it was more of a private institute, and I went after school and weekends in order to get some sort of, you know, certificate that enabled me to pursue my career. At that point in GSM technology, actually being a mobile technician, and you know, then I started out my first job, which is in GSM. My second job I went into, and I was there for a few years, and I mean, I put in a lot of work, and I felt I reached some sort of cap. You know, I reached my ceiling, and I just wanted growth. I just wanted more. You know, I just wanted to be able to provide for myself, you know, what I felt I was
capable kind of putting out,
deprived of growing up, you know.
Right.
And so I enjoyed the sense of making money and being able to, you know, do things with that money. And so I got very frustrated at my first employment. I saw this initial rapid growth, and I was national manager at the age of 19.
Right. And this is as a technician. This is so different from what you're doing now. It's just, that's kind of the hard work coming in almost, right?
Yeah. So I saw this initial like growth spurt, and then I reached this cap or ceiling, and I realized there wasn't much opportunity for growth at that establishment. And I looked outside of that establishment, and I started working at another firm, which was also in the technology space, but doing like this Bluetooth media, you know. At the time it was a very rapid way of serving proximity-based marketing. So you'd walk into a shopping center and your Bluetooth was active or enabled, and you would get pushed like a notification, right?
Yeah.
It was a great form of proximity marketing. I mean, you were able to hit the people as they were at the point of making the decision. But as technology and things evolved at the time, this type of communication became a little bit more restrictive. But as it may, we were outsourcing to Germany at the time. We didn't have the type of skill sets, you know, available locally, so we're outsourcing to Germany. And they were doing the mobile application development, which was very costly. And I looked at this concept of doing mobile application, and I realized, you know, this is the way of the future. This is certainly the way things are evolving, as I witnessed in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
So I got involved with mobile application development, I started up at a firm locally, which I had to do part-time because I started the firm with any sort of, you know, funding, any sort of capital. So again, it was a matter of lunch hours, after hours, weekends, until I was able to build the business up to the point that I was able to match, not 100%, but at least, you know, around 80% of the remuneration that I was getting at the time. But I was prepared to make those sacrifices and pull back on, you know, my expenses and certain luxuries. And it was within the first 2 months, I actually got awarded a pretty decent contract.
Yeah.
That gave me the sustainability that I needed at the time to kind of go into it full time, you know, full swing. And
so at this point, were you, had you been working out and had you been at this point, kind of working out was just something you did on the side and this was more of your main source of?
Absolutely. I was a gym rat. I went to the gym every single day. For an hour and a half, you know, it was socially what I needed at the time.
Right.
It was an escape, you know, from I felt like all I was doing is just work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice just to take that hour out of the day and just afford myself that hour and, you know, just take a complete break away from everything else. I would try and avoid calls. I would just really try and
focus on your workout.
Focus on my workout and
zone in.
Yeah. But I continued to train. I mean, since I made that commitment, I had gone every single day, you know, as I spoke about that initial transition of from skinny to fat to you know, kind of more refined.
Technician to starting your own business.
Yeah. So throughout that process, was into training. And so as you can see, for me, it was, there's an aspect of working smart. I mean, you have to work smart. But for me, it was literal, you know, blood, sweat, and tears that I put in because of the lack of support, you know, that I had, the lack of, you know, the funding that I had. I just had to make up for it with my time and my own abilities, you know, through literal hard work. That I did for 15 years.
You did that exact process while working and also working out on the side every single day, basically after work and finding an hour out of the day for 15 years. Question.
Yes.
Sorry, I might be slowing down a little, like my recording might be messing up a little bit.
So yeah, it froze a little bit.
Yeah, I was going to say, did I freeze? Sorry, the Wi-Fi has been a little choppy.
Yeah. So if you're on my mind, Jay, just repeat your question then or your statement.
Yeah, I was saying, so for 15 straight years, it was really just you working, going to the gym, taking an hour out of your day, and you just did that exact process for 15 years.
Yeah, pretty much.
So at that point, you must have gotten like jacked, like at that point, over 15 years of like straight consistent work.
Pretty much, you know, I think I was just genetically, I was in a position, you know, where I started to just gain initially, and it was the results, you know, that I needed just to keep me motivated and keep me going, you know. So if I look back and you say, well, you know, would you have done things differently? I think if I wasn't eating the way that I was at the time, sure, it didn't give me the desired physique, but it did give me the results that I needed as the motivation to continue training, you know.
Right, right. Yeah. So it kind of made you bigger, but it didn't make you ripped and jacked and that kind of ideal physique that most men want.
But what it instilled is a sense of, you know, putting the hard work and seeing the result. You know, I think a lot of us are results driven, and if we don't see any sort of results, it can become very discouraging. And that is the type of approach that I like to take with a lot of the people that I get into fitness, you know, to make it as sustainable as possible, because we don't want it to be overwhelming.
Right.
And they drop off as a result. And that comes down to the eating, that comes down to the training. You know, you don't want to start a person out straight up off the bat on broccoli, boiled chicken, and rice.
Yeah, that's a one-way ticket to just like starting a diet and then going back to eating McDonald's in like two weeks. It sounds terrible. Exactly.
You know, I'm the one in the third world country. I'm the one that should be having problems with Wi-Fi.
This has never happened, I'll be honest. It's just cut out. Do I sound better like I'm actually using my microphone?
Yeah, clear. Crisp.
Awesome. Okay. I think I'm back then. Yeah, what were you saying just now about the Wi-Fi?
Oh yeah, we have daily struggles here. Wi-Fi, power supply, you know, staying in a third world country, it represents or presents its own struggles or challenges, you know. So, especially for an entrepreneur, we have this system here, which is commonly known as BEE or Black Economic Power, right? And that was brought in by Nelson Mandela. You know, so you pretty much are employed rather based on, and not even employed, you are hired for projects based on your BEE rating in terms of employment equity. So the lower your level, example, if you're level one, you're more likely to get awarded a contract over someone that is obviously like a level four, five, I think it goes up to, based on the color of your skin.
Oh, really? That's in South Africa. That's just how it is kind of there?
Yeah, that's just how it is. And it's just one of those things that we accept and we deal with and we, you know, just deal with
the way life is kind of.
Yeah. But, it puts a sense of, you know, pressure, because it's extremely difficult for someone to, as a white male, it's extremely difficult to find employment. And I think that may have contributed, you know, to the need, you know, because we're faced with these options. We're given options, you know. A lot of us have these entrepreneurial abilities, and, you know, we fall into this like comfort zone of a 9-to-5, you know, with not wanting to take on a lot of the challenges that come from being an entrepreneur.
And you think that comes from,
you know, so even if you have these abilities, you know, you may not pursue them, or you may fall out of them at some point because of, you know, the level of comfort that you're seeking out of your day. I mean, we spend most of our time, you know, of our day working or at our job, you know, so you need to enjoy what you're doing, you know, you should.
From you think that comes from like the inaccess of like people in South Africa to having jobs in general. So it kind of creates almost a sense of urgency as in this is, I may not get another chance to have a job. So they get kind of comfortable with the jobs that they do have.
People get discouraged whether you have the abilities or not, you know. If you do, you can also get discouraged by the challenges that you may face, you know. And some people may seek some level of comfort, you know, in a 9-to-5 instead of pursuing, you know, the life of an entrepreneur. I don't want to make it sound dreadful, but, you know, it does present its own challenges.
Of course. And, yes. Not all sunshine and rainbows.
Sometimes we just need that nudge, you know, we just need that little push. And I think mine wasn't just one, you know, there was multiple, which kind of nudged me in a certain direction, took on the challenge, embraced it. And for 15 years, I've had my software company. I don't think I mentioned or I spoke enough about that, but if you don't mind, just very briefly. So
yeah, yeah.
The business that I got in, you know, was software development. We do web apps, mobile apps, all sorts of integration, bespoke development. And so I was always this, I mean, now I probably look more like a software developer now with my mustache, but prior to that, I would always enter the room and people would kind of look at me and be like, okay, like, you know, oh, where's the software?
Like, are we supposed to take this guy seriously? Like at this point, you're Jack.
Yeah.
You're like 6'2".
There's this perception that, you know, if you're a software developer or a geek, you know, okay, yeah. I mean, I'm a geek. I mean, I do geeky stuff, but right. I don't necessarily look like a geek, but there's this perception that if you're a software developer, you have to look a certain way.
Yeah.
And there's this perception that if you're a bodybuilder, you have to behave a certain way.
Yeah.
You know, which is
working in tech. You're not going to be nest quote unquote, like intellectual in a way. I feel like it's not considered like you walk into the room and they ask where the software guy is. It's hilarious.
I promise you, like countless times, you know, and then I introduce myself. Hi, you know, and they're like, oh, well, you're not what we were expecting, or, you know, you don't look like a geek, or I've heard that so many times in my life. But like I said, there's this, you know, which is unfortunate. I think, you know, it's the stereotyping of people. And you see a guy that's you know, muscular, and we create these assumptions of what the person, you know, what the person is like before even the opportunity to meet them.
Yeah.
You know, we assume that they're arrogant, and we assume that they're loud and obnoxious, and yeah. You know, these are typical or stereotypical you know, gestures that I've been referred to as now outside of the gym. So
and it's kind of hard to escape that, even like you're it's like, I think for most people it's kind of hard not to do that. Like it's, you almost do it subconsciously. Like you see somebody and
you have, I guess, you know, so, yeah. Yeah, it's brought on by the vast majority, obviously behaving a certain way or looking a certain way.
Right.
You know,
right?
So it was an interesting journey for me. I think that may have brought on its own challenges. You know, I don't even think I can tell you with certainty like that. That kind of made it more difficult for me when going into meetings. especially at a younger age. You know, so you can imagine I started out my business and I didn't have the dashing mustache, you know, or the incredible fade that I have now. But, you know, I would go into a meeting or a boardroom with CEOs and, you know, vice presidents. And I was 23, 24. Though I was able to, you know, present my solution, my business well to them, there was
disconnect.
Sorry?
There's like a disconnect between.
Oh, I thought you said disconnect.
We've had all these Wi-Fi troubles now. There's a disconnect between you and the people you're presenting to because they.
Yeah, because now there's this 23, 24-year-old bodybuilder here coming to, you know, try and sell us a solution, you know, technology solution that's going to help us overcome our problems. And so, yeah, that presented its own challenges. That made the sale more difficult for me. Yeah. So I really had to bring my A game. And I was conscious of this. I was aware of this. I was aware that walking into this meeting, I'm going to be taken as a stereotypical, you know, bodybuilder or non-stereotypical software developer. And, you know, I have to bring my A game. I have to put in one hell of a presentation here.
Yeah. So you understood the handicap going in. It wasn't something that you look back on and be like, oh, wow, yeah, they probably didn't really take me seriously.
Yeah, yeah.
That must have been one of the tipping points then in that case in terms of you. It must have helped in terms of you making the decision to leave that industry and try to start something on your own.
Yeah, so, yeah. You know, for me, Jay, I was most passionate about bodybuilding. I think bodybuilding has done so much for me. I can't begin to explain, you know.
Right.
And I owe so much to bodybuilding because of what it's done for me and done for my life. And I'm not talking about the last, you know, 2 years. I'm talking about the last 15, 16 years, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's only like the last 2 years that I've actually been able to, you know, to monetize or be remunerated from my efforts. But right. I've been doing this for a while. I've been, I was a sponsored athlete. I do competitive bodybuilding. And in South Africa, you know, I think it's just a general mindset here, but I don't want to refer to us as we, because I don't think I fit that stereotypical mold either, but certainly are not as forward thinking as other countries when it comes to social media and the power of social media and the power of influencers. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was putting in all of my effort. I was working, you know, doing content. I was giving weekends, you know, dedicating weekends, you know, Saturdays, sometimes Saturdays, Sundays, you know, to helping out at shows. You know, so over the last few years, I've really put a lot into the industry itself.
Right.
And, you know, unfortunately, you get remunerated with free product.
And which is not, it doesn't sound like you're looking at that necessarily a positive way. It's almost like.
Not at all, because you cannot sustain or you cannot live off of free products, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly not a handful of them either.
Yeah.
And so what I'm getting to here is pursuing this full time, or the thought of being able to do it full time as a result of that was never thought possible.
Yeah, it definitely created some hesitation because there's meanwhile you're probably creating dollars for them, but they're just kind of giving you some dollars, basically.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you would get 3, 4, 5 products, whatever. You'd have a budget and you got product. And that was it. You know, Most of the guys don't even work on like discount codes. I think now they're slowly starting to catch on.
Yeah.
I see a lot of the guys starting to bring on, you know, discount codes and offering commission and that sort of thing. But up until recently, it you know, really was just free product. But so other than training or coaching, it's very difficult to pursue any sort of career in bodybuilding and fitness. In South Africa, you know.
Okay. So you're saying the industry is a little bit different probably in the States compared to South Africa. Very,
immensely.
Okay.
Immensely.
You even mentioned last time that bodybuilding shows, like, you're rewarded with rice.
Bags of rice. You remember, because that is that's the truth. That's a true story. I've attended shows, and I mean, I've attended a lot of shows, and one particular show, the winner was given a bag of rice. Now, I mean, who doesn't like rice?
But are they giving it as like when they hand you the bag of rice, are they saying it like, congratulations, here's your bag of rice? Like, is it supposed to be like considered a good prize? Like,
I think the anticipation, you know, because the guy was given the rice and then he has to shake hands and take photos. So, I mean, he was expected to be enthusiastic about his bag of rice.
But was he really inside?
Certainly had to make for good photos for the sponsor of the rice. But, you know, I think the bottom line here is, unless you're doing coaching, and that is just another subject that I can talk about, because coaching is in its own right has become a very big challenge, you know, as there are so many people getting into fitness that have done a show or never even done a show, never competed. We actually did a parody video about this not too long ago, you know, about these like micro influencers, and they changed their Instagram bio name to _fit, you know?
Yeah.
And
it's a classic.
Now you're a qualified coach.
Right.
And, you know, I see this all over the world, but it's making it very difficult, because these guys are coming in and they're grossly undercharging. A lot of them are high school students or university students, and they're looking to just supplement, you know, their income or pocket money that they get from their folks, you know. But they're not.
You're saying in a way, sorry to cut you off, you're saying in a way they're almost underselling themselves.
Well, they're not underselling themselves, because what they're offering, you know, they're not in a position to sell for a premium rate either. You know what I mean? But
really qualified, right?
They're not. Yeah. But there's just so many, you know, of these coaches, coaches, because that the actual coaches aren't able to charge a full or fair rate for their services.
When you have these people who charge them for so much less, and they're, because they're popular and well known, regardless of how qualified they are, people listen to them.
Yeah. So So what the experienced coaches, the guys with years and years of experience, that, you know, that utilize their coaching as a platform to support themselves and their families, are now having to significantly reduce their rates in order to try and compete with these amateurs, really, you know,
yeah,
that are kind of finding their feet in the industry and offering coaching services. You know, so that was just my opportunity to vent. So thank you for that.
No, I mean, this is all very in line with where we've been going. It is.
So bottom line is, for me, I never thought I would ever be able to pursue anything in fitness because I didn't want to, you know, be a personal trainer. You know, coaching in its own right. I told you about this dilemma here. And those, you know, other than that, and maybe owning a gym, you know, how else can you
monetize,
get some sort of financial gain in order to, you know, support a more substantial lifestyle for yourself.
Right.
So, I didn't think it was possible. Sorry, that was a very, very long-winded approach to answer your question. But I never thought it was possible. But I kept doing my thing. I just kept putting in every day. I think the fortunate thing is for me is I wasn't, because I had the software company, is I was never dependent on making an income off of the content and the advice that I was putting out.
So you never intended that to, you never thought that was an option either. I mean, you thought it was an option, but
no,
you have an idea of how just it could possibly become.
Yeah, it never was an option because even in SA, we don't qualify for the TikTok Creator Fund, you know, so in terms of all of the views, in terms of all of the likes, you know, you don't get, you cannot monetize on that in any shape or form unless it's through sponsorships, endorsements, or paid adverts or that sort of thing. But you don't get paid for views. So my reason for getting into fitness wasn't at, you know, to initially wasn't to replace my income.
So it was more of a, something that you were passionate about.
It was a passion and it was an opportunity for me to give back.
Passion.
You know, it was an opportunity for me to help people. And there's all purpose to this, I promise, because it's all coming together.
The great reveal. This is good. This is good.
The big finale is coming, I promise. You know, but what I've learned ultimately from all of this, and my best advice, which I can now, you know, after these years, give anyone who wants to start their career, who wants to become an entrepreneur, you know, or who just wants to be more successful, who wants to be more wealthy, you know, whatever your reason, whatever your goal, follow your passion, you know, do what you love and you will be compensated better for that than if you're doing something you don't enjoy because you're going to dread it and you're not going to be as well rewarded in many aspects, you know, as what you were doing something that you love and that you enjoy and that you're enthusiastic about and that you're passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, so whether you're going for a career choice, I know the whole purpose of the show, so I don't want to promoted by any means anyone, you know, doing a 9-to-5, but you know, whether
what I will say though, the joke I made last time is that our whole idea is escape the 9-to-5 one episode at a time, but like I said before, Marcus and myself, we both have 9-to-5s, so sometimes you really need that to
It's that necessary evil, you know, it's that stepping stone, as it was for myself.
Right.
That 9-to-5 gave me the platform and gave me the opportunity that I needed to take that bold leap or that giant leap further
right.
In terms of pursuing, my life, you know, as an entrepreneur. But it is that, you know, the necessary evil. But I always encourage, you know, if you can do things for yourself, rather enrich yourself, you know, rather put that labor and that effort and all of that work, that blood, sweat, and tears, rather put it into something that's going to enrich yourself, something where you're going to gain, you know, financially, instead of enriching, you know, the pockets of others. But either which way, do what you enjoy, do what you're passionate about, what you're enthusiastic about. Enjoy your work to the point where it isn't work, it's just something that you enjoy. You know, and that's what I say, this is the big reveal, you know, this is now.
This is the grand reveal.
This is finally, ultimately, where I found myself through, you know, just doing what I love. And you know, I'm so passionate about fitness, and I'm so passionate about helping people. And, you know, I'm now in a position where I am able to monetize off of YouTube. You know, I got partnerships or, you know, affiliations with some very big brands as well. And I am in the process, actually have been for a while, in terms of transitioning now out of the tech world and going full time into the social media space.
Right.
Again, it was a matter of being able to get my, you know, remuneration to the point where I could obviously perform that transition.
Right, exactly.
Making sure the wheels don't fall off the bus at the same time. But quality of life is ultimately what I have been pursuing. And there was just a lot of challenges. There was a lot of resistance that I faced, and I pushed through that. But, you know, if anything now, as a result of just doing what I enjoy, is the quality of life that has come with that, you know?
Yeah.
And so being an entrepreneur is one thing. I mean, if you have the ability to go and sell something, you can go and sell something. But if you appreciate what you're selling, and if you, you know, if you're enthusiastic about the product that you're selling versus the one that you're not, it's just going to make that process of selling the product that you're enthusiastic about obviously more pleasurable, I mean, more pleasant, more enjoyable, you know, and there's going to be a lot more sustainability in that. And this has been my, you know, learnings over the last couple of years.
Right. And when you kind of look at it, you basically did this all while still working, which I think is a pretty interesting idea about it all, because I know I just mentioned it a little bit before, but it is true that, and not even necessarily necessary evil, excuse me. It's kind of important, and it's a more realistic way to look at the whole process of it all, where it's not all sunshine and rainbows. Like you were saying, it's really all about, you know, figuring out the best way to get it done. And for you, it was outside of your actual job. It was like pursuing your passions in general with fitness, which also turned into pursuing your passions for fitness in another means, which is through social media. So I think it almost in a way makes it even more accessible to people to actually see that somebody is able to accomplish something that you've done while still having been working for so long. It also must have been funny too, and this is completely unrelated, but as you start, I mean, you have millions of followers now, but did you ever have a situation where you're now presenting to people or you're trying to sell things and people know who you are at this point? I mean, you're got a pretty massive following now.
Yeah, so So, you know, the last couple of months, I'll get a call and then I'll be like, you know, hey, your name is Noel Daisel. So then I'll introduce myself and they'll be like, Noel Daisel, but are you that guy from TikTok, you know? Or, Or I'll go into a meeting and I'll be
like, you mean Daddy Noel?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It certainly has now got to the point where I've got grown men in meetings refer to me as Daddy Noel. But it started out as, you look like that guy, you know?
Yeah.
I seen you, I saw you like in a video or, you know, so that's how it obviously started off. And then now it's kind of a couple of months later, you know, it's reached the point, especially with the whole Daddy Noel tag, you know, that, yeah.
Meetings calling you. Pretty much. That must be a bit of a whirlwind for you. You're like, yes, it is I.
It has taken me months to get comfortable. Now I own it. I mean, now I straight up say, much love. You know, if I do like a cameo or we do a video, that much love, Daddy Noel. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I just had my car wrapped, my vehicle wrapped, and. There's actually a big Daddy Noel that they put on the wing. Now I own it. It is what it is. There's no escaping.
The cool thing about TikTok is that it's literally created such people. We talked about this a little bit before too, but it's created such massive platforms for people so quickly and in an organic and a healthy way almost. Is obviously people like what you have to say or you wouldn't have grown at that massive rate. So how have you been dealing with that overall, just in terms of that quick change? I mean, I know you were working on putting your stuff out, but as TikTok kind of works, it's a very exponential type of growth, I can imagine. So was it weird for you, like you said before, to just see that and deal with that and seeing all those people kind of having their eyeballs on you?
Yeah, you know, so it's been an interesting journey because, like I said, I was never one for cameras. I was so shy. I was so insecure. You know, I would literally run. You know, I mean, if you go back on like footage from camcorders and, you know, from videos that were taken as a kid, like you literally see Noel run, dart off, you know, I would avoid them. But you know, and I had this conversation with my sister as I'm now encouraging her to get into social media as well. She takes a very alternate approach to, you know, life and nutrition and eating and all of that. But she's got phenomenal content, and right now she's using that content to really, you know, provide healthy food and alternative methods of caring for her family. But there's so much more that she could do with that. And she can, you know, put this information on these platforms that can help so many more people, you know. But her biggest fear, one of the major things that's holding her back, is her fear of being in front of a camera. And it was very difficult for me to kind of get used to that. I mean, I used to stand in front of the camera and I would just freeze up. You know, like, it's one thing. I mean, I've gotten quite familiar with being having to train in front of the camera. You know, I'm in my natural habitat, you know, and I'm just doing my thing. I'm lifting weights and curling, you know, and there's a camera and it's recording. And so that I've become comfortable with over the years. But it was standing there and talking into the camera. I had such stage fright. It took me like months to get over that and to get comfortable with talking to the camera, you know. And that was
while you were working through TikTok, right? Like, it's like you're still kind of getting used to it.
That all started when I started to address people, when I started to address and talk to them through the camera, you know.
Right, yeah.
That all came later on with TikTok, because initially with TikTok, you know, we're a different type or a different style of content. And then we moved more to like first person addressing people, you know, addressing the camera and that was a challenge. That was something that I had to overcome, and that's something I had to get comfortable with.
Right.
You know, public speaking, you know, I do a lot of events and things now as of late. I'll go and address schools and assemblies and hundreds of kids. Something I love doing, you know, just inspiring the youth. But it was nerve-wracking. You know, it was absolutely nerve-wracking. I would stand there and I would freeze up.
Yeah.
You know, it's like my brain would just shut down from the nerves. And
repetition that kind of works you through that, and you get more comfortable with
repetition. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Just repetition, you know, pushing through and just making it work, you know, adapt to survive kind of thing, you know.
Right.
So once I got comfortable with the camera, you know, I think that was one of the most major personal struggles, you know, that I had to get through. And then, you know, I mean, there's other struggles. Like we put a lot of time into the content, you know. People think, social media influencer, easy, you know, take some pics, you know, cool, nice job, nice life you have. I mean, I'm here, you know, working 14, 16 hours a day and still trying to put an hour or two for training, you know.
Yeah, right.
So it hasn't reduced the amount of hours that I work in the day at all. And I'm happy with that, you know. I just enjoy now what I'm doing more, and so it doesn't feel like I'm just constantly working, you know. But I'm working throughout the day. And, you know, you need to treat it as a business. You know, obviously you need to put proper planning, and, you know, you need to spend time on certain things. And anyway, there's a lot of hours that goes into that, but there's its own challenges and struggles within it, as I mentioned, but the getting familiar with getting comfortable with the camera was a major one for me. And then, you know, the rest of it kind of just feels normal. Just it feels natural. I mean, apart from going to the gym and having to take a couple of selfies now every time. More recently, even outside of the gym, I just go to the local market, the barber store, I mean, just wherever. And just more and more people are now, you know, just recognizing me and asking me to take pictures. And, you know, it's just something that I enjoy, you know, that I love, and I'm just very happy to do, just happy to meet people and chat to them and give advice. You know, I think obviously when I go to gym, that is work for me. You know, I'm still a competitive bodybuilder, and so the time that I spend in the gym, I need to maximize it. I need to, you know, really apply myself fully to that, you know. So I'll try and just do a quick few meet and greet and selfies. And then it's, you know, in a very friendly, very polite way, you know, just excuse myself that I can get back into my training, and then just, you know, blast it out.
Right.
But other than that, the most noticeable thing for me would be the quality of life. I mean, I keep going on about this, but, you know, that's the most notable thing that I can mention here that it's brought in. It's the reduced levels of stress, anxiety, you know, that has come as a result of this more recent shift transitioning through. I mean, the technology space, it's very deadline driven. It's very project driven. You know, you're always out on the go. You're trying to, you know, get in new projects. You know, I had a large team that they were supporting. So you're just constantly out there and just pushing to obviously get projects in, and then you're pushing to get projects out. So it seems somewhat counterproductive. You know, you're out there selling just to put pressure on the team to get it delivered sooner. You know, it's just this constant in and out, in and out. But it's just an environment that's very high pressure. You know, it's got a very high churn rate. It's got a very high burnout rate in terms of the industry itself. But so
probably knowing that you have, I don't want to say you're able to fall back on this, but that it's, you know, something that is there for you that you really care about and love and will, like, in all likelihood be something that is what you do all the time, probably made the stress levels kind of, nobody can see me doing this, but kind of flipping away. Like you know where life is headed almost in a way.
You know, like a lot of people would say to me, you know, looks fade and, you know, you don't leave the software, do the social media. I mean, don't
leave your job.
Cancel, you know, don't leave the software, you know, don't go into the social media full time. You know, there's no longevity in that. You know, you don't know if these platforms close down and you don't know what the future holds. And, you know, what if you injure yourself and, you know, then you can't look a certain way. And, you know, so I mean, we're faced with these risks and these challenges in any business, you know, so, that doesn't, I haven't allowed that to deter me in any way in terms of the effort that I'm applying. You know, I just, even in terms of technology, in terms of software, I mean, nothing is for certain. There's nothing is guaranteed in that sense. I guess in any industry, you know, so the effort that I was applying there, you know, has now shifted to the effort that I'm applying onto the social media space and treating it, you know, as a full-time occupation and putting a lot of effort. I still have to maintain the software side, so there's still hours in my day that I have to allocate to meeting with a team and just making sure that everything is running and operating smoothly, you know. So I'm not exactly out 100%, but I slowly started to put in hours because I was always doing the software, you know, from like morning to evening. And then I would go to the gym. I would get back, we would film, and then I would sit and I would continue to work on the software until like 12, 1, you know? And then I started to take hours out of my day and started to allocate those hours initially to the social media.
Right.
So, initially I started to take from the evening. So I used to take an hour, you know, and then another hour and another hour, and slowly, I used to take, you know, just more and more hours out of my day from the software and allocate them towards the social media.
Like slowly to the point, your lifestyle.
Yeah. To the point where I was then taking days out of the software and allocating days to the social media. And now it's done a complete, you know, flip in the sense where I'm now allocating hours to the software, you know.
Yeah. And days
just to make sure
social media.
Yeah. So that's got majority of my focus at this time.
Right. I mean, I think, I think it makes sense for sure, because it's taken off so rapidly and so recently, and you know, it's probably amazing from your perspective to be able to look back on your journey and actually see the way that transition has happened, that balance is the switch to, and I think one thing that I always love to kind of wrap with, or is always a pretty good way to end things off, is for you to take a step back for a moment. And when you think about your entire journey again, as a whole, what would you say the biggest piece of advice you would give to someone who might potentially be thinking about starting their own business or trying to do something that is not the ordinary thing to do?
So I think if there's not really one thing, but if I can leave you with three things, right, that I feel.
However many.
Okay, cool.
Lay it on us.
Take risks. You know, you have to be prepared to take that risk. It's that initial risk of starting out. You know, it's that risk of spending more time and eventually ultimately transitioning over. But there are risks that you have to take in order to be an entrepreneur, you know, or to be successful at, you know, being an entrepreneur, you know. You have to, and this is just purely me speaking from my personal experience, and I'm no guru when it comes to your life coaching or business coaching. This is really just what's worked for me, right?
Yeah.
Take risks, hard work, you know. You got to put in the effort. For me, it's always been about, you know, hard work, as I mentioned, in absolutely everything that I do. And I can say unquestionably, hard work will always pay off, you know, and do what you enjoy, do what you're passionate about, you know. And I think those three elements fundamentally would be, for me, you know, something I wish I'd been told way sooner in my life, you know. But, you know, some of it just came naturally. The rest I had to kind of
learn along the way.
You know, learn by trial and error and by failure, you know. But, yeah, that I think is what I would leave in closing is put in the effort, work hard, work your ass off, you know, take those risks, don't be scared, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. Just, you know, get it done. I just love what you're doing. You know, I try to convince myself before that I enjoyed meeting with people and that I enjoyed doing business development. You know, because I kind of found my way into software, and I saw an opportunity, and at some point my entrepreneurial mindset said, here's an opportunity to make money, but it's not truly what I'm passionate about. Never have been, you know. It's just, and I'm trying to convince myself, but, you know, you're passionate about doing business development. You're passionate about doing marketing. You know, you're passionate about meeting with people, facilitating deals. Like, this is what you're passionate about. This is what you enjoy, you know. But, you know, you need to understand and realize what it is you truly enjoy, what it is you're truly enthusiastic about, what you're truly passionate about, and try and make a business of that.
Right.
And I just personally feel that your chances of success, you know, would be substantially more.
Right.
Or greater than doing something for the sake of, you know, making money purely.
And you had mentioned that a few times for sure. And I think as you were saying that, I was just kind of thinking that, you know, the Noel from, you know, way back when, where you were the one, the Noel that was sitting in that situation where his girlfriend was being hit on and he didn't know what to say or do, you probably look back at that guy now and you're probably like just amazed at where you've come. And I can't say enough how impressive it is, how impressive it was to me in the beginning. That's why I reached out to you. Really thankful that you were able to come on the show and how open you were with your story about everything. Cause I'm sure that, you know, honestly, it might've been a little hard to talk about that type of stuff. Cause it was, you know, some of it could have been traumatizing. Some of it could have been hard for you to talk about in general. So I appreciate you being open about it. And I know that a lot of, you know, the people that follow you and the people that follow us will get a lot out of it. And you know, I can't thank you enough for coming on to the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you very much for the opportunity. You know, and a lot of it is, you know, sometimes difficult, but, you know, for me, it's, I've had to just remove the emotion from that. Like, this is my story, and my story helps people. You know, my story inspires and my story motivates.
And that's a wrap. Everyone, thanks so much, as always, for listening to another episode of The Success Bug. If you enjoyed this interview, this episode, please, as always, feel free to leave an honest review, whether that's 5 stars or 1 stars. I pray to God it's not 1 star. Shouldn't have even said that. But I digress. It helps us grow. It helps us find new listeners and followers like yourselves and ultimately grow our community and achieve our ultimate goal, which is to inspire you all to escape the 9-to-5 one episode at a time. Shout out to Noel Dizel for coming onto the show, being one of our biggest guests. I think our most popular guests in terms of followers just combined across social media platforms. It was really awesome to have him on the show and really talk about all the amazing things he's been able to accomplish over the past year and a half. But at this point, you know the deal. We'll be back next Friday. Marcus, my co-founder, and myself will be breaking down the net worth of a young entrepreneur or celebrity. You're not going to want to miss it. We chop it up. It's a good time. See you then.